Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to be back. Had a wonderful time in Manitowish Waters last week. The show was a lot of fun to do there. Thanks to everybody who showed up at the program to watch, and to all the people that I had a chance to meet during my stay, the few days I was up there. But Rick Ryer and Joe Hartke and Jane Richter and Napoleon White from and Jim Packard from Wisconsin Public Radio were great, as always, during the show and before and after. And a special thanks to Ray and Nancy Pilmonis. I fished with Ray every day of the World Championship Muskie Classic, and we didn't catch any muskies. Caught a couple of bass by accident while fishing for muskies. But Nancy makes some great brownies, and she made some great lunches for us every day. Sat out on an island of... And did a little fine eating, I should say. And you know what? I picked up a few aches and pains. I was feeling it this morning a little bit. And who better to have on the show right after that than Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenall? Hi to you two, by the way.
Hello.
Good morning. Good to be back.
That cool, damp weather just brings it all out, doesn't it?
I did the math on the way over. I was doing it in my head. We fished 2.5 days, really, a half a Friday. The contest itself ran half a Friday, all day Saturday, and half a Sunday. So Ray and I each put in 23 hours casting over that 2.5 day period.
Wow.
Some big lures, I'm assuming.
Big lures. Yeah. Those bulldogs are pretty heavy lures to throw. Some of the lures are pretty heavy. I kind of felt it a little bit. You know, I hadn't been casting that much, you know, consecutively. You know, we had one 12-hour day, and pretty much, except for a half hour, I think we were pretty much casting all day long.
It's probably a good thing you didn't catch anything big. You'd really be in trouble today.
No, we were hoping to be the champions, but we didn't make it. But anyway, that's the kind of thing, you know, in the joints of the shoulders, you kind of feel it
That's just classic for an overuse injury. It's something you're not used to doing. You may be used to golfing or playing softball or riding your bike or doing those other activities. But sadly, there's not a lot of carryover in those specific skills. So you're using your muscles in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so even though you have, for example, if you have a cardiovascular base, that cardiovascular base will carry over to another sport. But the musculoskeletal demands are different. So your muscles and joints are going to feel it.
Yeah. And that's carried over to rehabilitation, is that it has become much more sport-specific. Mm-hmm. Just as Lori said, you may be fine golfing, but you use those shoulder muscles a little differently, and you're gonna hear about it for the next couple of days.
I am used to fishing, but, you know, we had some windy days, and I am kind of up in the front of the boat where you're casting, and then you're also, the boat is sort of rocking back and forth.
Mm-hmm. That can get your back going.
I get your back. Well, yeah, my back was fine, but I think you're casting a little differently depending on the wave,
right.
The
yeah.
size
right.
of the wave yes. and so forth.
Trying to
right.
stay inside the boat while you're
right.
casting.
Yeah, trying to stay inside. I didn't fall off. Tell you what, I should give the phone number, let some others have a chance to get in here at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call if you have some questions or comments. Jim had mentioned frozen shoulder. What's that condition that's known as frozen shoulder? I don't have that anyway.
Well, it's a there are a couple different types of frozen shoulder, but basically it's a condition where the joint capsule tightens down and you lose mobility in your shoulder. It's very painful, and you're unable to get your arm overhead, behind your back to tuck in your shirt or take your wallet out of your pocket. It's difficult to reach out your car window and perform any overhead activities at the shoulder. It basically falls into two categories, primary or idiopathic, and that is it comes on for no apparent reason that anyone knows about. Shoulder starts to get sore, feels a little stiff, and over time it starts to just tighten down. And others are secondary. That is, they have some known cause. For example, you've spent the weekend painting your house and you stir up your rotator cuff, get some inflammation, and it becomes secondary. Or you have surgery and you don't move it. It gets stiff secondary to it. But the really difficult one is the idiopathic. There's a tremendous amount of controversy about how to treat it. Some people say, you know, regular physical therapy decreases pain, increases your motion more quickly in the early phases, helps you get your motion back more quickly. So the research that shows that benign neglect is useful also. That is, you have occasional physical therapy visits to keep progressing your range of motion as strength as it returns, but that it's going to come back as it comes back. General course of time, 12 to 18 months.
Whoa.
Right. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And there's not a tremendous amount you can do to speed that up.
Oh, man. Well, let's hope nobody has frozen shoulder.
Exactly. It is one to avoid if you can.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what Lee and Shauno's got here. Lee, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Well, hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, on this little rainy day here. yeah, my problem isn't a real huge one, but it's annoying. Bill and Laurie, maybe you can help me out. First of all, I exercise. I get plenty of that. I'm out there every day, walk an hour, hour and a half, and I do other things too besides regular walking. I do other exercises. But here lately, Bill and Laurie, I've been getting, there's a nickname for them. Please excuse me if it sounds funny to you. They call them Charlie horses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they know all about those.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they seem to come right in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m., between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. I go into a deep sleep, and then I start awakening with pain in the calf, and then it sort of rotates around the ankle, and then it rides up again a little bit. And here lately, I haven't had it, but, I mean, I have had it like for 7 days in a row last month, and maybe I'm lacking a certain vitamin. But surely I'm getting plenty of exercises with my legs. I really don't know the answer.
Hmm. Well, what do you think, Bill?
Lee, is it cramping?
Yeah, it starts out mild, Bill, and then it gets a little more serious, and it gets to the point where you just got to jump out of bed and walk on your legs.
Yes.
I mean, there's no denying about it. You're just not going to just shake your leg a little and say, oh, go away. No, you have to actually walk, and then you can go back to sleep again.
Right, okay. And that's pretty typical, and I think it's not an uncommon issue. I think first of all, the cause can be multiple in nature. It can just simply be overuse and fatigue of muscles. It could be related to dehydration or some other type of electrolyte, you know, kind of a dietary imbalance. There are certain diseases or disorders that can cause, you know, leg cramping, and again, especially at night. When you worry more about more serious diseases, it's going to be consistent. It's going to become more frequent, mm-hmm. and at some point it'll be every night, and it'll be harder and harder for you to get relief. If it comes more sporadically, then looking more at just simple muscle fatigue, you're not giving the muscles enough chance to relax and recover between activities, or maybe something dietary as well.
Oh, that sounds wonderful then, Bill. I want to thank you very much, and Laurie and Larry.
Thanks a lot, Lee. Thanks very much for calling. And, you know, when I get them once in a great while, I usually make them go away by, if I'm laying in bed and I don't want to get out, by pointing my toe downward and a kind of away from my head and stretching.
Mm-hmm. It depends on which muscles are cramping up.
Yeah, it does.
It's calf, then you got to bend your ankle. And the other, you'll know which way you have to stretch it. And that's what has to happen. You have to slowly lengthen the muscle and maintain that lengthened position for a while. Then it should start letting go. I don't know, Laurie, is there any evidence about sports drinks helping?
We lost Laurie there. Oh, you mean Laurie?
Me.
No, I'm sorry, Laurie, not Lee. We lost Lee, not Laurie.
I was kind of staring off into space, but no. But I'm back. Well, sports drinks, you know, if you have an electrolyte imbalance.
Yeah.
So sports drinks are generally for people who are in sort of intense aerobic activities for greater than 90 minutes. They say if you're running, biking, exercising for less than 90 minutes, then there's really not a need to replace electrolytes. So if she's doing 60 to 90 minutes of walking a day, she's probably not getting into that zone unless she's really, you know, not having sufficient salt or potassium in her diet. So it sounds like she's a kind of a healthy person and probably conscious about what she's eating. So
right, very active.
Water would be the big thing.
Thanks again for calling, Lee. Appreciate it. Ellen in El Dorado, your turn. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
I had hip resurfacing done in May, and my doctor did not prescribe any sort of physical therapy other than walking, biking, or swimming. And I was wondering if you could recommend some exercises that you've seen to have worked with patients there.
Are you having any symptoms? How is it feeling?
No, I'm fine. It feels okay, but this winter I was experiencing sciatic nerve problems, and mm-hmm. I had gone to a physical therapist then, mm-hmm. and I had exercises to do for my lower back,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to continue those now.
Oh.
And he didn't put a lot of credence in those.
Huh.
So I was disappointed to hear that. And I wondered what you're seeing other doctors recommend for physical therapy.
Well, I tell you, and Bill will probably chime in on this too, having a strong core is going to be essential for maintaining the health of that hip in the long run, and that includes your back. If your back is not strong and you're having sciatic problems and back problems, the loads that your back normally has to carry need to go somewhere, and it's going to be to your hips or your knees. If your hip isn't up to full strength, it overloads your back or the other hip. So things just get shifted around. It's not like the forces go away, but they need to be absorbed by some part of your body. The loads during normal walking, stair climbing, your exercises, your bicycling, whatever. So strengthening your back and continuing your back rehabilitation program, I would think, would be critical to the long-term health of that hip.
I agree. That's why I was sort of surprised to hear him say that wasn't necessary.
Yeah, I agree with Laurie as well. It sounds like you're making a good recovery from the procedure, which is great, but in terms of long-term health, both of that hip and your back. And again, this would not be a situation where you would need to see a physical therapist two or three times a week for months after months. It would be going in for a couple of visits, have them examine you and start your exercise program, and then seeing you periodically to progress the program.
Mm-hmm.
But an independent program would be a really an easy goal to reach with you.
You tell that doctor to call Laurie and Bill.
I'll do that. The problem that I'm worried about is that I had lost a lot of strength in that leg. I favored it so much, and now I'm wanting to regain that, and I can notice that I'm weaker in that leg.
Yep.
So. You're so wise, because that hip wore out for a reason, and if you have insufficient strength, every time you take a step, those loads have to go somewhere. If you don't have the strength in your muscles to carry those loads, they're going to be placed on your hip joint. You're going to wear out your resurfacing.
Yeah.
We don't know how long those last. They're still relatively new.
So good luck, and get some exercise, and get to a physical therapist. That's the advice, Ellen. Thank you very much for calling. Diane in Milwaukee, we'll get to you in just a second. Just to remind you, Laurie Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, one of our guests. The other, Bill Boisenault, associate professor, teaches at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain, give us a call. Laurie Tyne Brody, Bill Boisenault to answer your questions. Larry Mueller here. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. And now let's turn to Diane in Milwaukee. Diane, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Saturday I was at Indian Summer and walking along, and some teenagers unexpectedly started jumping and hit me, pushed me, inadvertently, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I fell right over on my side, just plopped right over like a statue. And now I was able to get up, and now I have aching hips. Am I right in assuming that as long as I don't have sharp pains and that I'm able to actually walk, even though I'm aching, that there's nothing broken?
True. If you're able to walk, it's unlikely that it's broken. Your hip joints are pretty strong, stable joints. They're fairly strong bones, and unless you're osteoporotic, chances are they're not going to fracture. But you wouldn't be able to walk in the case of a severe fracture. You could have a hairline fracture, and you'd still be able to walk on it. But that's unlikely in your case. It's more likely that you've bruised your hips, stirred up the muscles, injured your back. That could be causing some pain into your hips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bill?
And Diane, the idea would be that if that's all it was, and that's what it sounds like to me as well, is that it may take you 3-4 weeks to fully recover and get rid of these aches and tightness and stiffness, but you should, from 1 week to the next, you should feel like you're making progress. And as long as that's the case, then you're fine. If you find that you're getting no better, or in fact, actually you're getting worse, a week from now or 2 weeks from now, then I would go in and see your physician and talk about the injury and have them examine you.
Thank you. Made me feel much better.
All right. Thanks, Diane. Thanks a lot for calling. Good luck. Joan in Clear Lake, your turn. Hi, Joan.
Oh, hi. Hi, Larry. I think you're wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
You always calm me down. Well, my question is this. 2 weeks ago, last Friday, I have two new kitties. My other ones are old. And I was carrying hot soup, and they ran across my legs. So now I have third-degree burns. Now, I've been doctoring for this, but on my right leg, and I feel like I think I'm out of alignment. And so now my left leg aches, but I don't know, not like this. And what can I do for both of those legs that would be helpful?
First of all, Joan, in terms of the burns, what do you mean by doctoring? How are you
doctoring
the burns?
I went to urgent care, and then I've seen my doctor twice.
Good.
Okay, good. And are you wrapping the burns or putting ointment on the burns?
Yeah, and I got Silvadine. And
Okay. All right, good. And when do you go back again for a follow-up visit?
A week from Friday.
Okay. All right. Well,
it was a really bad burn.
Oh,
yeah, it sounds nasty. I'm sorry to hear that.
But I don't want to lose the strength in my other leg or the one that's, injured.
When they ran in front of you, did you fall or twist or something?
Well, they ran over, Larry probably knows this, if he's had kittens, they ran over my legs, and I haven't had little kittens for such a long time. And I spilled this very hot soup all over my leg.
So you were sitting?
No,
he's walking.
She's walking, okay.
To the table.
Okay.
My guess is there was a little hopping around that went right after that.
Okay. All right, but you didn't have a fall or an injury associated with the kitty scampering, hot soup, scalding kind of a thing. Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, you should be able to recover from this fairly easily. So if you're a regular exerciser, or if you have some kind of exercise that you like to do, you should be able to continue that even with the skin burns. If you're walking, the one thing you can't do is you can't get in a pool if you're a swimmer. But if you're a walker, you should be able to do that. If you have a home exercise program where you do leg lifts or do light weights.
I was doing
yoga.
I don't know. That's not working out so well.
Because you can't get in the postures or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure it hurts. You're kind of stretching that skin.
Yes, it hurts.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Are you getting something for the pain?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Tramadol or something.
Okay. Well, what you may want to do is see if you can see a physical therapist for one or two visits to get help with modifying your exercise program or modifying your yoga. Or I don't know if you've been to a yoga class or have a yoga instructor.
No, I've been doing it for 30 years.
Okay. Well, if you're unable to figure out how to modify your current exercise program, then I'd suggest seeing somebody who can help you with that.
Okay.
But you're right. You should.
Because the other leg is, like I said, it feels like it's out of alignment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it kind of makes sense to me that you're having some aching in the sensation of the leg, because I'm sure you're standing differently, walking differently since the burn. So muscles are working differently. They're being asked to work differently. So I'm not surprised. And I think Lori's right. I think you just, you know, be active within the pain tolerance that you have. And as your right leg gets better, the left leg should also start improving. But seeing somebody to help you modify, to protect the burns and protect your back, could be very worthwhile.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Joan. Appreciate it very much. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests, Larry Mueller here, Jim Packard on the phones, and Patty is online from Green Bay. So let's go to Patty. Hi, Patty.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
My daughter dislocated her shoulder last Sunday. We had her in for the doc, checked it out, put it back in and everything. And they suggested going to physical therapy. I'm wondering if there's anything we can do before the therapy starts.
Well, how old is she, by the way?
16.
16?
Mm-hmm.
How'd she dislocate it? What was she doing?
She was racing dirt bikes.
Racing dirt bikes, okay. And is she a regular, is she very active, volleyball, swimming, other sports?
Basketball, yeah.
Basketball.
Softball, basketball, racing.
Yikes. Okay. She's seeing a physical therapist next week?
2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. In the meantime, the only thing I'd probably feel comfortable having her do is some isometric exercises of her shoulder muscles. Is she in a sling?
They have her in a... it wraps around her waist.
Right. Okay. All right. The only thing that I would suggest as a possibility would be some gentle isometrics. And that is, for example, if she took her opposite hand and put on the outside of her elbow, she should try to push her elbow away from her side. Not at full strength, but just at a very low level to try to remind the muscles what to do.
Okay.
Doing that out to the side, backward, forward, rotating in and rotating out. The thing you need to know about shoulder dislocations in that age group and in someone who's involved in a sport such as basketball is the re-dislocation rate is about 80 to 90%.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's even with therapy.
Even with therapy. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Did they do radiographs?
Yeah.
Her shoulder was there. Did they say anything about a Bankert lesion or a... Hill Sachs lesion or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No, the only concern that they had when we took her back in for another recheck on Friday was she still has the numbness.
Oh. Hmm. Mm. That's an issue. So she's not, when's she going to the doctor again?
He said he wanted to see her at the end of the therapy in the 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay, and has the numbness improved?
No.
Is this a family practice physician?
No, it was through the urgent care.
Through the urgent care?
Mm-hmm.
If she still has numbness, you might want to consider taking her to your family physician, to see your family physician, or to see an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in this. It's not normal to have... How far does the numbness go?
Through her bicep.
Down through the bicep?
Yeah.
Okay. That's not typical following a dislocation. Was this a pretty significant... accident off of a dirt?
Yeah. Yeah, she went to do a double jump and missed.
Yeah.
It was probably out of location. We're thinking about 5 to 6 hours.
Okay. Yeah, there's potential for some nerve damage there, and in a young woman like that, I don't know that I wouldn't wait 4 to 6 weeks to go back and see a physician. I'd go see my family physician or I'd go see an orthopedic surgeon sooner.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Yep. Thanks, Patty. Thank you very much.
That
for
was
calling.
A really important piece of information that she added there at the end. That really changes everything in my mind. I don't know about you, Bill.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. She needs to be examined by a physician just to make sure the nerve integrity is intact, that there has been no nerve damage. And if there is, to take steps to help rectify that as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Good advice there. Bob and Woodruff, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've been having a pretty big problem for about the last month. I have some kind of sciatic nerve problem. I saw two doctors, I saw one on the 14th, and then like a week later, and I don't know why it really happened. Like, I didn't get injured or anything. It just sort of gradually happened, like the lower back, the whole, it's in the left leg and it goes down like to the knee. And it really bothers me the most when I'm sitting in a chair, sitting in a car or a truck. And something like this sort of did happen in the wintertime for about 2 weeks, but it went away by itself. I have no idea how to improve it. My next step was see a chiropractor. I don't have insurance, and they said either therapy or the next step an MRI. So what do you suggest?
Okay. All right. Well, any numbness or tingling?
A little bit of numbness in my heel.
Okay. And any weakness, any difficulty with that foot when you're walking, tripping over your toes, or a hard time going up and down stairs with that leg?
No, not really. But when I stand up, like a few minutes later, it starts to get really, really sore.
The heel, you know, the heel gets sore, or
the leg.
The leg, it does. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in terms of MRI, that would be indicated if this numbness was getting progressively worse, or you started noticing some weakness, or you started having troubles going to the bathroom. That's when you would want that kind of test done and working with your medical doctor.
Okay.
Short of that, if you're not having any issues there and the numbness isn't getting significantly worse, then seeing a physical therapist, or if the chiropractor is closest to you, then that's what I would recommend. The pattern that you talked about, starting in the back and moving down the leg, is pretty classic for sciatica if it's the back of your leg. And mm-hmm. the fact that sitting and driving tend to make you the worse goes along.
Yeah.
You may have something going on with a disc in that low lumbar area. So, there are certain exercises that are designed specifically to move symptoms up out of the leg, up toward the back.
Okay.
And once the symptoms are out of the leg and just in the back, then the approach changes to help eliminate the pain and then keep it from coming back again. I'd recommend, again, if you've got a therapist in your area that you can see, I'd like to think, just based on what you told me, they would have enough to go on to start you on that program.
Yeah, I mean, because I really haven't been doing no exercising or anything. For about a week, I was doing a little bit of walking. It didn't really seem to be doing any better. I mean, I got to say, it is better than when it first originally happened.
Okay.
But it's still, like, once I,
sit down.
You know, Bob, the fact that walking didn't make it worse, it sounds like, then I would continue to walk. I think that would be important for you.
Yeah, it didn't really make it better, but maybe I just didn't give it enough chance. I just, you know.
Yeah. Well, the activity is good because you don't need to be in bed. You don't want to be in bed at this stage at all. So if the walking is not making it worse, I would continue to push the walking. But it's also sounding like walking by itself is not going to get, and time is not going to get rid of this for you completely. And, the sitting, we have to be able to sit. We have to be able to drive. So, again, there's specific exercise approaches to move the pain up out of the leg to the back. And that's where you need to start with.
Okay.
A lot of that can be done on your own with just some instruction.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm going to make an appointment for the chiropractor, but I'm going to, I really have just been like laying down. So, I'm definitely going to do some walking and stuff. So.
Okay. That
All
sounds
right.
good.
Good luck. Right. Thank you, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a ring. Bernadette in Eau Claire is next. Bernadette, hi.
Hi. About a year ago, I hurt my knee and I got a Baker cyst on the back of my knee now. And hello?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and if I walk too far, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't walk too much, then it kind of goes away. And it just, like right now, about 2 weeks ago, I walked, like over a mile, and now it's acting up every morning. And I was wondering what I should do for exercise for it.
What kind of injury did you have a year ago?
I really didn't do anything. I was just kind of hurrying across the street, and, I don't know what happened. It was really nothing.
Okay.
But about a week later, it hurt real lots at first, and then about a week later, I discovered the cyst.
Okay. But so you've never seen a physician for it or had your knee examined?
I didn't have—I had my doctor look at it, but she really just said that they don't do anything unless it gets worse, and at my age. And
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, a Baker's cyst is typically an area of your joint capsule where when your joint accumulates excess fluid, it kind of pouches out there. So when you overdo things and you get your knee joint or any joint stirred up, it swells and it's like a bubble in a tire. It kind of pushes it out. Then when you take it easy on it and the fluid returns to normal fluid levels, then the cyst kind of goes away. But the weak spot is always there. So what it's telling you is that when you are very active, your knee tends to swell. So the question is, why does your knee swell? Usually underlying arthritis is one reason, or tear in the cartilage or the meniscus that sits between the two bones. It acts as a cushion. And sometimes those things are treated with injections. There's some injections you can do to calm it down, or injections to increase the lubrication. Short of that, in terms of exercise and activity, a pool is probably the best place for you because it'll limit the amount of loads and weight bearing on your joint, and the hydrostatic pressure of the water also helps minimize accumulation of fluid in your legs. So my recommendation would be that a pool should be your primary focus for your exercise program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and does that, if I do go for a walk and it starts acting up again, is it, am I hurting it to make it worse?
No, that's a really good question. As long as it goes back down the next day, probably not dramatically. Just make sure to wear good shoes. You should keep your legs strong. A leg lift would be a good exercise for you to do in addition to that. Try to stay on a soft surface such as a track and not walk on the cement a lot. Keep your body weight down. Those things are all going to minimize the impact of your walking on your joint.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Jason in Columbus, it's your turn. Hi, Jason.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm in my mid-30s. I'm very active, but I have been diagnosed with some herniated discs and a little bit of spinal stenosis. When it flares up, it can take anywhere from a few weeks to a few months to calm down. And when it's calmed down, I can run, I can lift weights, I can do pretty much whatever I want. But my concern is, having done physical therapy, chiropractor, acupuncture, as I get older, my expectation is my flare-ups will be more significant and or more frequent. What is sort of the future of lower back, herniated discs, stenosis-type therapy or treatments? I've read some on the line about lasers and other stuff, and I'm just wondering what sort of the new wave stuff that's out there is.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it sounds like there are lots of periods where you're doing well. You're managing very well, correct?
Yes, except when I'm not, and then I'm pretty miserable. But, yeah, those aren't maybe... a couple of times a year I'll have a flare-up.
Okay. And that's pretty typical with herniated disc, is that there are episodes of back pain and maybe some leg symptoms, which you have to be careful of. What signals that the disc condition is getting worse is that the episodes become more frequent and they become more severe and they take longer to recover from. What's crucial when you're in your good stretches that you do a good job of, one, protecting your back as well as rehabilitating your back. And so it sounds like you're very active, which is great. But it's important that you cross train. I wouldn't recommend that you only bike or only run. That in terms of aerobic activities, is that you incorporate some activity where you're not getting jarring or pounding through the spine along with running on some days of the week. But you want to vary the activity. Weightlifting can be a very good thing if it's combined with core strengthening or stabilization exercises. Because I've seen people who lift a lot of weight, are incredibly strong in certain muscle groups, but in their trunk, they are incredibly weak. It's not picked up with daily activities because the legs are so strong or upper body's so strong. But you need a lot of good core strengthening. And there's also some weightlifting maneuvers that you would want to avoid that put a tremendous amount of load on the disc. So this is where I would hope that the therapist would have spent some time with you, along with your own knowledge, is to protect your back with the weightlifting, protect it with the cross-training with your exercise program. And also in terms of what you do job-wise and other leisure activities, again, I would do a lot of educating of things to avoid or things to modify, because you want to go as long as possible without having to do anything else for your back that would be invasive in nature. Because the technology is changing and improving. So that's kind of my general spiel with where you are, Jason, and especially being in your 30s, is that, you know, unless you're having numbness and weakness in the legs or having trouble going to the bathroom, it's really not time necessarily to consider an invasive procedure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Mark in Racine, you're next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I've got a couple of questions, hope you might be able to address. The first is my daughter is working as a CNA, and her first job was working in a subcritical care unit, people coming out of intensive care because they basically timed out, they needed the beds, mm-hmm. would go into her unit, and she's been having a lot of joint problems, I think, as a result of this. As a child, she could shift the lower joint of her knee just by muscular power back and forth, probably 3/4 of an inch. I think she's got very loose ligaments around her joints. Might be hypermobility syndrome.
Yep.
And she is no longer working in this particular job, but she's having a great deal of joint pain in her knees and in her wrists. And a lot of that probably had to do with lifting extremely heavy patients.
Yep.
And I was wondering if you have any recommendations of what she could do or should do or who she should see about this.
What do you think, Lori?
Well, the things you tell me make it sound like she does have a hypermobility type of syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
How old is she?
She's 23, 24
okay.
now.
Okay. Is this going to be her career?
I am really not sure. She spent a year and a quarter traveling in Asia and working at Mother Teresa's and stuff.
Okay.
And I think she is ultimately going to be doing some sort of international work, perhaps in the nursing field.
Okay. I would probably recommend that it not be involving lifting patients.
Yeah.
The CNA jobs, I mean, my heart goes out to them.
What is CNA?
It's a certified nursing assistant.
Okay.
And they're the people who come and they lift patients, they change their bedding, they get them on and off the bedpan, they get them dressed, they get them in and out of bed. It is a incredibly heavy and difficult job, and they've come up with a lot of tools to help them and strategies, and you should always have two people, and there's lots of education, but bottom line is you're still lifting a lot of bodies all day long, and they're in awkward positions. So it's a really tough job. We see a lot of CNAs in our clinic who have been injured. So if she does have some underlying hypermobility, this is going to be very difficult on her and hard on her body. So you know, she could see a physical therapist. A stabilization program would be the way we would go with this, and that is training her to use her muscles to keep her joints in proper alignment.
Okay.
So going back to what you told me about what she could do in high school, she could fire her muscles and essentially sublux her joints.
Yes. She could just, you know, without pushing with her hands or anything, she could shift her joints back and forth by a long
amount. What we try to do is teach people how to forget how to do that. Because what she's essentially done is trained her brain, taught her brain a motor program how to create instability in a joint.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we try to train their brains to teach their muscles to create stability at a joint. So that's what the goal of her physical therapy would be to take her through a sequence of exercises and activities to help her forget how to do that. Because you don't want her brain to default to motor firing patterns that sublux her joints.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So as a fundamental, that's the theory that she should be operating from.
Okay. Is there any sort of a treatment for this? I mean, above and beyond simply motor training? Is there a way to firm up the ligaments? Or
not if it's a generalized genetic hypermobility problem. And that it would take an evaluation by someone to look at her, to look at all of her joints. They look at elbow hyperextension, thumb to forearm, you know, knee hyperextension, a bunch of different things to look at generalized hypermobility. So if she has a generalized connective tissue hypermobility, then there's not a medical intervention for that.
Okay. Okay.
Another question. This is related to me. I've been, we've got a bunch of weddings coming up. I'm a woodworker, and I've been doing a lot of woodworking lately, hand planing wood and stuff. And I'm currently having a problem with my shoulder. It feels like it's the insertion of the deltoid to the humerus at the back. It might be the teres minor or infraspinatus or something like that. But I drive a stick shift car, and it's a real misery to push forward and outward at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I've sustained an injury or simply have an irritation, but...
Is it down on the outside of your shoulder at the deltoid insertion, or more in back?
It's in the back. Okay, the deltoid comes down. I would say
right.
It's along the rear insertion to the humerus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds more like a myotendinous overuse problem. If it was on the outside of your arm, then the rotator cuff often refers pain down to your deltoid insertion.
Okay.
On the lateral or outside aspect of your arm. Posteriorly, it's probably a myotendinous. It could be teres minor, more likely infraspinatus or even subscapularis.
Mm-hmm. But
so,
it's something that's likely to just clear up once I stop doing this.
And do some stretching. Stretching
okay.
your arm up overhead, your elbow up to the ceiling, an elbow bent and across your chest.
Okay.
To stretch out some of those posterior tissue. Could be even be a posterior capsulitis
yeah.
just from overuse.
Lifting my arm, if I lift it, lift my forearm up and tilt my elbow out, it's quite painful. I don't
okay.
know if that's...
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be painful when you stretch. As a general rule, stretching should only feel like stretching. It shouldn't
right.
feel like pain. So if you feel pain when you're stretching, then you're overstretching it. Do you have
okay.
the same generalized hypermobility as your daughter?
Not that I'm aware
okay.
of. I think that comes from my wife's side. She's got a brother who's 7 feet tall and
okay.
Another one who's 6'10". My son is 6'8", and
okay.
so...
Okay.
From
right.
that side of the family.
Okay. Well, it's easier to blame her. She's not on the phone. But if you had the same thing, then I'd be concerned about some instability in your shoulder creating those symptoms. So
good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Stacy in Ironwood, Michigan is up next. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I had a freak accident about 10 years ago where I did a front flip on rollerblades and my right leg got was like stretched way far behind me when I landed.
Ouch.
And... I really didn't have that much pain. I mean, the wind was knocked out of me, but I got up, and it was in the evening, so I just didn't feel that bad. The next morning when I got up, I couldn't lift my leg very well to put my pants on, and that is still the case after all these years. And I've had an MRI, and I've seen a bunch of different doctors, and they can't really tell me what happened. One said, well, it's probably a stretch injury, and I went through physical therapy, but it seemed like they wanted me to try and move my leg different ways, like, you know, when you lift it up like you're gonna go upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do that, and they wanted me to do those exercises, but I almost feel like something happened to my back, even though I don't have any pain. And I also can't like balance on my heel on that leg.
Mm-hmm.
My foot just kind of slaps down. So I guess I got an exercise bike this past winter because I wanted to get more exercise, and that seemed to really make it worse. Like, I almost felt like my leg was starting to drag after that.
Mm.
So I guess I want to know if you maybe know what I should do.
Yeah. Stacy, the MRI, was it of your hip or your back or both?
My back.
It was your back. Okay. All right. Well, and you mentioned a stretch injury. Did they mention what they thought was injured by the stretch?
Well,
did they talk about like a nerve injury or a muscle injury,
no,
capsule?
I think he said he thought it was a nerve
okay.
injury. He said it gets stretched too far and then it's just kind of shot.
Okay.
Things don't stretch back. But it just seems like I just couldn't believe that I didn't have any pain when this happened. And yet it's really affected my... Like,
your
I can't play
life.
Tennis, I can't run.
Right, right. And it's been a long time, obviously, for over 10 years.
And I feel like my leg muscles are super, super tight now. Like, if I try and stretch, and I don't know, I don't want to make anything worse. I mean, I'm not in pain, so I'm very grateful for that. A lot of people have pain.
Right.
I just mainly have this weakness, but every once in a while I'll trip because my foot doesn't
Have you had any testing of the nerves, like an EMG?
I did have an EMG, and they said that, you know, it wasn't really... The guy said, well, there's an extremely slight abnormality in something.
Okay.
He didn't... That's all he told me.
And how close was that to the injury that you had the EMG? I mean, a couple of weeks, or
no,
was it years later?
No, a few years.
Okay. All right. And so have you seen a neurologist or a physiatrist?
I did see a neurologist. And, you know, she watched me walk and everything, and, you know, and she said, well, I think you just have to have more confidence. And something happened to me, and I just kind of want to know what it is.
Right.
I mean, I was very active before this happened.
Can you describe to me a little bit better the position you were in when you landed?
Is it hyperextended when it's stretched? Like, if say you're kneeling down. My leg was going in that direction.
If you're kneeling down?
Well, like, you know how when you're kneeling down and your leg is behind you? I wasn't kneeling, but my leg was going in that direction.
So it was going back. But
and then my top, I ended up kind of a little bit twisted towards the left.
To the opposite side.
Okay.
Yeah. So... I just can't believe something this radical happened to me without any kind of pain or swelling or...
Yeah.
And have they looked at your hip?
Well, I went to an orthopedic, and he just kind of moved it around, and he said he just didn't know.
Okay. Yeah, the other thing to think about would be an MRI of your hip to see if there's anything going on in there.
Yeah.
But if you've had an EMG, you've seen the neurologist... it sounds like a really complicated history, and there's nothing that jumps out at me about to say, oh, well, they've missed this. Well, oh, that they've missed that. It seems to me that as much of a workup as you've had done, it would take somebody sitting down and looking at everything and doing a very detailed exam at this point and looking at what's missing. I don't know that we can do that in this amount of time over over the radio.
Yeah, but I agree with you. It's surprising that there wasn't more pain involved with this considering the type of numbness that you're describing, but it certainly sounds nerve-related to both of us. And
Do you think I should avoid the bike thing? Is that a temporary...
Seemed like it made it worse, I would avoid it. How long did you start biking when you started doing it?
I was on an exercise bike, and I did it for about 2 months, pretty much like every day or every other day, about 20 minutes.
Okay.
And it seemed like it progressively got worse.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason I called is because I feel like I'm just maybe going to get lucky someday. Somebody will have had a similar situation.
Yeah.
So they'll maybe, you know.
Yeah. And walking, can you walk long ways, or when you get to a certain point, do you get that same feeling?
I feel like I'm swinging my leg when I walk. I don't feel like I'm using the correct muscles.
Okay.
I feel like I kind of like throw it.
Okay.
So after I walk for probably a mile and a half or two, I mean, you know, things get really tired because I know I'm not using the right muscles.
Yeah.
Well, Stacey, one of the things maybe if you feel comfortable with the neurologist you saw, there's no reason why you can't call back and say, I'm no better. Who do you recommend that I see? Mm-hmm. And see if they can give you a consult to maybe a subspecialist within the neurology field or a physiatrist that maybe is known for working with people with, you know, histories like this and these kinds of injuries that don't resolve.
Do you think a sports person, like a sports physical therapist, I don't know, maybe athletes,
absolutely.
And I would go to anybody if I could get a recommendation.
I mean, those sports physical therapists are experts at looking at movement, particularly gait and walking, and doing detailed lower extremity exams. And since this involves your lower extremity, I think that'd be a reasonable approach also. But having someone take a really close look at your motor firing patterns, here at UW, in fact, we have a physical therapist who does research in gait. If anyone has videotaped your gait, looked at it, compared to the other side on a video analysis with reflective markers and such, potentially even in combination with an EMG to get a better picture of your gait, that might actually help working backwards, figure out what's going on.
I wonder if it would be useful, and just here as a layperson, if she, before she went, if she walked a mile and a half and got into that sort of gate before she went to see someone? Would that be useful or not?
That's a possibility. The other way to approach it would be to look at her walk when she's fresh, have her go down and walk on the treadmill or ride the bike for a certain amount of time and then come back and look at her afterwards and see if it's changed.
Yeah. That would be the way to do it. Sure.
But you're right, to kind of get a picture at both ends.
Both
when
ends.
Are doing relatively well, and then when you're having problems, that's a good idea, Larry.
Yeah.
Well, I would probably need to go to another city because I'm kind of living in a small town.
Where are you?
Ironwood, Michigan.
Oh my. Okay, that's a long ways.
Well, I'm willing to travel.
Yeah. Marshfield Clinic, maybe?
Marshfield Clinic, yep.
Yeah, that may be a possibility.
That might be close. That might be closer for you.
Well, I'll travel. I want to go to somebody good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well if you want to leave some contact information, we can search our mental databases and get in touch with you and maybe give you some suggestions on where to go.
You want to stay online, we'll put you on hold, Stacy, and Jim Packard can get your information, and we'll pass it on, and we'll get back to you. All right?
I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And get her on hold there. All right. Got her on hold, and we'll put you on hold for a couple seconds here as we talk some other things with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Really glad to have them with us and glad to have you listening in. And Lori and Bill, at least from the in the Madison area of Wisconsin, there are probably lots of aches and pains this morning because the Ironman competition was held yesterday. And, you know, you run a marathon, you swim, what is it, I forget, two and a half miles, and then you bike
112
miles all in one day.
It's a long day.
I didn't read it. My wife was telling me that there was a woman in the event who, this was her seventh Ironman competition this year, which means once a month.
Yeah. Wow. She picked her parents well.
Yes.
I don't know how you recover.
There are those people who are at the top of their game, and a lot of it is practice, 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 practice. But you consider the amount of training you have to do to do that, and then to do the competition once a month. You know, you're just genetically endowed. You know, you have good connective tissue. You have good alignment of your joints. You have a good balance between fast twitch and slow twitch fibers. You have good metabolism, good, you know, connective tissue that repairs well. I mean, genetically, you know, you're there. Plus hours of long training.
That's right. Yeah. And probably very good and appropriate training, I would guess, assuming that they're healthy and feeling good once they recover.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. So, yeah, my hat goes off to all the people who did it, started it, stopped it, finished it, whatever in between. Good for you.
Good for you. Brad in Wisconsin Rapids. I don't think Brad did the Ironman.
No. No, I'm afraid not.
Well, but you have some other issues you want to talk about.
I do. Yeah, I have a history of pain in my low back and tingling in my foot. And I've had it for about a year or so now. And a couple months ago, the tingling in my foot was replaced by a lot of pain in the ankle and in the foot. And so I had some imaging done recently, and the imaging showed stenosis and some bulging in L5-S1 in my lower back. And then it also showed a ganglion cyst in my talonavicular joint in my ankle. And so right now I'm trying to figure out what to do about that. I've been recommended physical therapy for the stenosis in the low back. And can that help with low back pain, stenosis, physical therapy?
Yes, it can. people can have a full recovery, but it doesn't mean that, and stenosis is a narrowing. Within our spine, there are some spaces that nerves travel through. And there are certain conditions that can narrow that space and compromise the nerve or the spinal cord sometimes, and can typically will cause symptoms down into the leg and foot, whether it's pain, numbness, tingling, weakness, or a combination of those. And interestingly, there are probably a number of people walking around who have some narrowing and have no symptoms and never will have symptoms. So the fact you have it doesn't mean that you're doomed forever to have these kinds of symptoms, but it does mean that anatomically, even when you're pain-free, it doesn't mean that the stenosis hasn't gone away. It doesn't come and go like that in terms of the degree of narrowing. So there's different kinds of techniques and exercise approaches that have been shown with research to help people with stenosis. And there's different aspects of the rehab. One is when you're trying to get symptoms under control. That's where sometimes traction, unweighting, what we call flexion exercises that actually open up the space and give the nerve roots more room. And then once the symptoms are under control, then you work more on some long-term recovery, maintenance, and prevention. And that's where conditioning is important. Good flexibility through the hips is very important. So when you do bend and twist and move, all the pressure doesn't fall right across that low back area. And your disc at L5-S1, the bottom two discs of the spine are the ones that are most often involved. And if they are bulging, then they can potentially encroach upon a nerve. So being taught how to exercise, what to avoid, precautions to take is a big part of protecting that area of your back and protecting those nerves.
Is spinal decompression something that you've heard of? I think that's like traction.
Well, yes, decompression, you know, traction, applying traction to the spine can increase some of the spaces within the spinal canal itself and can open up the space for nerves. There are machines that do that. There are some things we can teach people to do that at home. There's some unweighting devices. I hear decompression. There's also decompression related to a surgical intervention where they go in and surgically make more space for the nerves as well. So that typically happens when the pain is so incapacitating, it does not resolve, or you're getting progressive numbness or weakness. You know, that's where a surgical consult would be important.
And I think the tingling that I've had in my foot, I think they're attributing that now more to the cyst in the ankle.
Yeah, and that could be. And I was going to ask you in terms of, are they attributing your new foot pain to this cyst as well?
Possibly, yeah. And that, I don't think physical therapy, I really don't think that would be helpful for that.
Probably, it's probably not the first course of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things with the foot and ankle, the tingling and the pain, it's hard to know whether it's due to the cyst or due to the back. You just kind of have to treat the back and see what happens to the symptoms in your foot.
Okay, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Oscar in Chautauqua, your turn now. Hi, Oscar.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Yep. Thank you. I've got a torn rotator cuff, and it's severely torn, and they're not recommending surgery for me. I've seen two orthopedic doctors, and one of them said maybe, and the other one said no, and I don't have a great deal of pain in the shoulder. I've got pretty much full range of motion of it, and I'm kind of wondering why not reattach that.
Oscar, can I ask how old you are?
66.
Okay, and how did you tear your rotator cuff?
I fell.
Okay, you fell? Okay. Chances are, in someone who is 66 years old, the rotator cuff was probably already partially torn. When they've done imaging of people through decades across the lifespan, they notice that as people get into the later decades, the majority of people have partial rotator cuff tears or evidence of long-standing tendonitis. The fall was kind of the icing on the cake, and whatever remained of your rotator cuff tore. So the first issue is that they probably don't have much tissue to work with. It's not like you have a pristine, beautiful tendon like you might see in a, you know, in the chicken you had for dinner last night. But instead, you have something that is kind of the consistency of a small bowl of wet noodles. And then you try to attach it to a bone, and it just doesn't work very well. It's a surgery, is a fairly extensive surgery. The fact that you have full range of motion and very little pain, it's hard to improve upon that with a surgical procedure. So if you have good function of the shoulder, you have little pain, you have full motion, it's hard for a surgeon to make you better. And many other muscles around your shoulder can substitute for your rotator cuff. So there's not a lot to be gained in their mind from doing the surgery. If it were as simple as reattaching a pristine, beautiful tendon, they'd probably do that. If you were in your 30s, 20s, and you had a fall and you had an acute tear, they'd go in and they'd fix it. But chances are your tendon's not a beautiful tendon to start with.
Okay.
At this point. So that's why. But that being said, it doesn't mean you should ignore it. It means you should continue to do some exercise to keep your shoulders strong and healthy so that the other muscles that have taken over for the rotator cuff continue to function well.
Okay. I'm on my way to physical therapy right at the moment.
Oh, fantastic.
Good for you.
All right. Yeah. Here.
Thanks a lot for calling. Good luck. Diana in Reedsburg, we turn to you now. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I've had problems with my right lower arm, starting at like the wrist and the lower third, and it happens mostly when I play the piano or the organ. And I did go to a physical therapist last spring, and she gave me a stretch and a couple weight exercises, and it really didn't seem to make it any better. And I went back this summer, and she really didn't have anything else to suggest, and I was wondering if you did.
Do you have pain? Does it feel weak, or what are you experiencing?
It's more of just an ache.
An ache, okay. And the ache goes through the forearm?
Yeah, just the lower. It's on the forearm and mostly the lower third
okay.
of my arm.
Just one arm?
Yep.
Okay, and you're a piano organ player, so you're using both arms pretty much equally?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What I'd probably suggest is seeing a physical therapist who specializes in performing arts.
Okay.
There are physical therapists who do that, and they look beyond just stretching and strengthening, which is sort of the first line of treatment. And then if someone doesn't know what to do from there, then you should probably see somebody who has some expertise in performing arts. They look at your posture. They look at how you use your muscles and a number of different aspects of performance.
Mm-hmm. All right. That sounds great. Do you know where I would find somebody like this?
Sure.
I had seen someone at your clinic, really.
Okay.
And I was hoping there would be somebody like this, but when I asked, they didn't seem to know. But
okay. Well, Diane, a couple things. One, after we're finished, if you'd be kind enough to stand and leave your contact information,
because sure.
we can help you. But the orthopedic section of the APTA, they have a website, and orthopedic is spelled O-R-T-H-O-P-A-E-D-I-C.
Okay.
Section, APTA. And they have a performing arts special interest group. And I think there's a page for clients, for the public, to try to access a physical therapist with different specialties in your area.
Okay.
So if you go to their website and click on the page for patients and clients and then maybe type in performing arts, PTs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you have one at UW?
Well, I was trying to think as Diana was describing her.
Well, we used to. Mark Erickson
right.
was probably the person who did more performing arts.
Right, and he's moved over to the Waukesha, Milwaukee
mm-hmm.
area.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone who does a lot of that. I did in my last job, but now I've kind of changed gears, and I don't do as much of that anymore as I used to.
Yeah.
But we can think on it.
Yeah, okay. Diana,
and we can check with Mark. He probably knows somebody, too.
Yeah.
All right.
So, Diana, try the website, and if you strike out there, again, Well, you have our contact information. Can that be provided later?
Sure. We'll put you on hold. Jim will take it. And
okay.
Diana, thank you very much for calling. I'll put you on hold, and Jim will be right there. And let's go to Raymond in Superior. Ray, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
See, I'm having a problem with my left leg. When I'm at home and I'm in a rest position, sitting in a chair or just walking around the house, there's absolutely no pain whatsoever. If I go to bed, there's no pain whatsoever. But as soon as I walk a block and there's excruciating pain right down the left side of my leg, and my calf of my left leg is always extremely sore.
And how long has this been going on, Ray?
Well, it seems to me I thought that I was having problems probably coming on about 4 months ago.
Okay. Was there an injury or an accident then?
Not that I know of.
All right. And how are you now compared to 2-3 months ago? I mean, are you getting better? Are you worse?
It's about the same. I just can't walk at all, any distance at all.
Okay. And then once you stop walking, how quickly does it resolve?
If I absolutely stop and take the pressure off of that side, the pain starts to go away. But as soon as I start to walk again, it comes right back.
Okay. And does it feel like it's in your calf muscle?
Actually, it's from the side of my buttocks all the way down my leg.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Well, what you describe is kind of a classic description of what's called claudication. It's leg pain with a certain amount of walking. And claudication can come from a vascular insufficiency, not enough blood flow to muscles in the leg, or it could be related to something in your spine, in your low back area or the hip, where there's some pressure being placed on a nerve. And when you're upright walking, the spaces for the nerves tends to get a little smaller. And so there's either vascular claudication or neurogenic claudication. And the fact that you've had this for 4 months and it's not getting any better, thankfully not worse, but it sounds like you're not any better, I would go see if you have a family practice physician or an internist, go there and have them assess you from a vascular standpoint, and they can do a nervous system screen as well. And to see if they can sort out the underlying cause of those complaints.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Depending on what it is, PT might be able to help, but you really need to sort out between those two.
Okay. Good luck. Thanks.
Good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ray, for calling. Chad and Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Chad.
Yeah. Hello. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I had a development of a, I'm a 37-year-old, had a development of a rogue blood clot in my, from my knee to my ankle and my right leg. This summer, probably about a month ago. No risk factors according to my doctor. I'm doing the regimen of warfarin, Coumadin, but I'm not seeing any real relief from swelling. It seems to come and go. Seems like the blood is pooling there. I have been wearing the TED socks, and if I do that, then the swelling goes down. But if I miss a day or a few hours, then it seems like it swells up again, mainly around the ankle and the calf. I'm just wondering if there's something I should be doing that's different, if this is just going to take time to resolve, or what I'm looking at going forward.
Mm-hmm. What is your physician telling you?
He basically indicated that he thought that the veins had been stripped during the clotting process, and that they're just not, when the blood pumps, it's sliding back, and or just can't make it up to that next step in the vein, I guess. That's how it was described to me.
And do they? What do they say the prognosis is?
Well, they say it could be months.
Okay.
I'm just wondering. There's really not been any. Do this, don't do that. Try this back. But is there something I shouldn't be doing? Something else I should try?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that I would guess that they've done all the logical things like elevation and things like that. And do you have some exercises you do for your leg?
Nothing specific that they've given me, but he said, just don't try to walk 5 miles, but do the 2.5.
Okay.
Elliptical machines, recumbent bikes would be fine, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, but my gut sense, and this isn't really a primary problem that physical therapists see, but I can answer from an exercise perspective, and that is any kind of exercise that's going to have a repetitive calf muscle activation, the bicycle would be good, the elliptical, any of those things where the muscle contracts and relaxes, it's going to serve as a pump to help move fluid through there, and that has to be helpful for your vascular system.
Sure.
In general, it's going to be better to have something where your legs are not completely dependent, so I would guess that a recumbent bike is going to be better than an upright bike, and a recumbent would be better than an elliptical where your legs are in a dependent position. What you might do is want to alternate between those. Of course, my first choice would be a pool because the hydrostatic pressure of the water is going to assist your venous return. And you can do vertical exercise in that, and you can combine that with some swimming, some horizontal exercise with some flippers or things like that. It's also going to pull in more activation of your calf muscles, but without the effects of gravity holding that fluid down. And I would think that that would be, just from a biologic point of view, helpful to your vascular system to not have such a load from gravity all the time.
Okay. I was just in a... not sure if exercise was going to be harmful or helpful. I didn't really get a straight answer from my physician on that. No.
Well, it's one of those things where it's not a yes or no, but it's how it's done again. So if you're doing something, as he said, a lot of walking or getting a lot of pooling of fluid in your leg, it's not going to be good. It's going to cause a lot of distension of the vascular system. And every time you stretch those, you're relatively young, they're somewhat compliant and they can rebound. But at some point you keep stretching them over and over again, they're going to lose some of that compliance or elasticity, and you're going to get more long-term pooling. So, my sense is that you want to avoid a lot of the fluid pooling in your lung. It's going to be or your legs. It's going to be better for your tissue. So, any exercise where you're not getting a lot of pooling in your leg or edema in your leg is going to be good.
Yeah, and Chad, it sounds like you described a bit like you're on a bit of a roller coaster ride. Some days are better than others.
Yes.
And I think as you recognize that earlier, that can help you decide that, okay, this is a day exercise-wise I can push a little harder, or this may be a day I need to just back off a little bit.
Sure.
So paying attention to how much swelling is there before you start the activity and compare that to previous days.
Okay.
But the hope would be over time that there are more and more really good days and fewer days that you need to back off.
Okay. All right.
Well, thank you for your help.
Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Somebody wondered if you're moving a heavy object, let's say, or something reasonably heavy along the ground, is it better to push that object or to pull that object? Push and pull.
Well, the best option would be, if it's a really heavy object, is to have somebody help you.
I knew you were going to say that.
I have to say that.
I'm going to call Jim Packard when I have something.
That's what I would do. I call him all the time. So so that's the ideal. And I understand that that's many times that's not an option. But if it is an option, I recommend, especially if it's, if it's an awkward object, then getting a second pair of hands can make a big difference. In terms of pushing or pulling, it has more to do with the position that you put your spine in for whether you're going to push or pull. Sometimes people push, they tend to hyperextend or arch their back too much and then push. So they're using the small joints of their back for stability as opposed to muscles. And sometimes when people are pulling, they bend their back forward too much. And that can put a lot of strain on the discs of the back. So, you kind of want your spine in a neutral or middle position, and this is where the core strengthening comes into play that we talk about so often, so the muscles are really providing the support, the core stability to allow your legs and arms to work, keep a lot of pressure off your back. There's times if it's something low to the ground, if there's a handle you can grab onto, or if you can get a rope around it so you're more upright when you pull, can make a difference. So unless it's an emergency, if you can kind of plan the action out, you can minimize the chance of hurting your back.
You do see as well, golfers, for example, you'll see some people with golf carts that are push carts, or they push them, and others that pull them. And I've often wondered myself, as a matter of fact, well, what's better for something like that is not as heavy.
Correct. Yeah, I think you could probably be okay either way. That's more, unless you have maybe something with your wrist or your shoulder. But in terms of your back, that's a pretty safe activity.
Some of the pulling the cart behind put your shoulder in a bit of an awkward position. So for some people, that's uncomfortable. And actually, pushing it in front of you, some people find they can generate more force from their hips to push it than pulling it where it takes more abdominal strength.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much
you
for
bet.
Being with us.
Pleasure
appreciate
as
it.
Always.
Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, Bill Boys and Alt, associate professor at the UW Medical School. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.